Hey guys, as promised last week, I told you I was going to sit down with Chris Metzen and have a conversation that may or may not be as WoW focused as one of the typical interviews we might do with Blizzard executives or developers or directors. And while in a lot of ways I was right, in a lot of ways I was dead wrong. There is some seriously cool insight coming up in this interview you've tuned into today. And let me just say, I just finished it, and I'm now putting the final edit together, and I just need to say how inspired I am by this conversation with Chris. He is not only just a great friend to me and has been for enough time for me to realize what a nice guy this guy is. I mean, you guys get to see him on stage, but there's just so much more to him. He's such a nice guy, such a cool dad, great husband. He's all those things, and his creative process has never been fully laid out for me in terms of, you know, where he finds his inspiration and that kind of stuff. This interview is largely about that, and I am completely inspired by it. If you want to know what it takes to work in the video game business and really truly be a creative visionary in that space, I think there's a lot to be learned from this interview. Lots of other little extra things, though, you'd never expect. So I don't want to spoil it all right here. I want you guys to hear it for yourselves. And I'm really glad I could bring this to you. This was a meaningful conversation between me and Chris Metzen, and I'm really grateful for it and thankful that he was willing to spend the time and do it. So enjoy. It's me, and it's talking to Chris Metzen of Blizzard Entertainment. See you on the other side. Hello, everybody, and we're back. This is Scott, and I have on the line with me the one, the only, Chris Metzen. Chris, how you doing?
What's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing great. It's been a little while since we spoke. In fact, we kind of made a pact at BlizzCon last year that we would hook up and do some some supplementary podcasting between the last time we talked, and it's been a little crazy. There's stuff going on, you know?
Yeah, I think we were joking when we connected the other day that we are officially fulfilling our professional agreement to have had a jam session before the next BlizzCon, so yeah. We're just barely getting in under the wire here.
Sneak it in just before November. Yeah, it's coming up fast.
Exactly.
Are you how you feeling about all that? Are you excited to jump right back into that whole circus?
I am. I'm excited for this year's BlizzCon. I think it's going to be awesome. But it's always around this time every year, like I start to get, you know, the anxiety creeps in and the nervousness and like, oh hell, you know,
yeah.
It's coming.
Yeah.
And I start having like irrational fears of like, wow, what if I, you know, what if someone gets hit by a car, you know, got all this stuff to do and talk about. And
yeah, well, I know I speak for me and others who are listening that it's nice to hear that someone who we all think is pretty cool and collected on that stage has the same fears we do when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Oh man, I'm a train wreck. Like in particular last year, you know, I was up half the night. I think I puked a couple times. I mean, I mean, my anxiety was going nuts. I think there was one point, it's like you get in your head, like just psychotic, you know, brain work. And I'm like, should I wake my wife up to call a paramedic? Because I think I'm on the verge of having a heart attack. No, I won't wake her up. No, yes, I should. No, it's just nerves. You're going to be fine. Oh, I think my arm just went numb. Yeah, I'm just going through the whole psychotic, you know, just trying to calm down. And, you know, it's funny. I'm a wreck all the way up until the moment I walk out on that stage and you're just pumped full of nerves and adrenaline. And the room is so big and the vibe is so big. And I'm just excited to talk about this stuff, that the point at which I take that first step out on the stage, it all just goes, I'm Iceman. You know what I mean? I'm a fighter pilot. Like suddenly it all just comes into focus, and while I'm hyped up, like my body's literally bouncing from the adrenaline, it's fine. And it's the weirdest magical moment, right? Like my thoughts are clear and it's just fun, you know, and I can just be myself and, but it never gets easier. And people say like, what are you talking about? You've done this, you know, five or six times and don't you get more experienced or don't the nerves abate as you go? And strangely it doesn't, you know, I feel like the pressure's like even increases over time, you know, cause you know, I want the company to do well. I want the fans to have fun. I want ultimately people to love what we're up there talking about. You know, we work so hard on this stuff and I feel like that level of responsibility and commitment kind of only gets, I guess, if there's a level of pressure to do well, is a result of that level of commitment, I think it actually gets strangely harder over time.
Yeah, and you'd think it wouldn't because, like you said, people assume that the experience of it would make it better. But having run my own event, and by the way, thank you very much for doing a little voice work for Nerdtacular this year. That was awesome. Fun. That was totally cool.
Yeah, totally.
But even that event, it's like I've done this for 7 years. It's a more sort of intimate gathering of fans and people. Yeah. And every year, because it goes so well, this is what I think it is. I think it comes down to this psychology. It went so well and came off without such a hitch, and all my fears were not met. You know, it just went great.
Yeah.
So then all I can do is launch into, well, now the pressure's on for next year to either maintain or better it.
Got to do even better, right?
Right,
yeah.
Right.
I totally get it. You know, it's a strange thing, but it's a good problem to have, I guess. Right. You know, All that points to is that, you know what, apparently the events are fun and people are having a blast when they're there. And, if I can get up there and be goofy and geeky and that helps to keep the wheels moving and get people excited, then that is what, you know, that's what I'll continue to do. So it's been a trip thinking about BlizzCon. It's a trip thinking about, you know, an event that big, like how did this happen? You know, after all these years and, you know, we're coming up on, what has it been, like 20 years of Warcraft, 10 years specifically of World of Warcraft. I can't even believe it, you know?
Yeah.
And somewhere along the line of just working our asses off, there's this crazy trade show that we started doing. It's like, it is just a blur, you know, like maybe 20 years from now, I'll look back and all of us really at Blizzard and look back and really be able to appreciate how special this moment in time was. We're just working. We're just go, 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 go. And sometimes it's hard to have that perspective of this is all pretty miraculous, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you think about the 20 years as a snapshot of time, I mean, that's a huge chunk of time. A child was born the day Warcraft was, you know, launched as an idea, and that kid's off to college, you know? Like that's crazy to think about. And you guys in the middle of it, I'm sure it's just a maelstrom, but when you get done, yeah, I mean, hopefully you'll have some of that reflection and be able to see
and get
what
some,
it was.
Get some space and perspective on it all. Hell yeah. You know, I'm not there now, obviously, but I can anticipate as an older man being very deeply satisfied, you know? And when you look back, cause right now, you know, I'm a craftsman, you know, we're all craftsmen at Blizzard, and really your focus is on, you know, we try to build things that we want to play. You know, we try to build things that would, you know, immerse us and geek us up and just, you know, we're trying to build great things, to, you know, for people to have a good time with. And so that ultimately, if there's a satisfaction in a job well done, it's really focused on, for the most part, I guess I'm speaking for the dev population, but just on the execution of the thing and the playability of the thing. Hopefully, you know, our products are very clever, but I anticipate that as an older man, and as I look back, hopefully I make it that long, perhaps it'll be less about the craftsmanship and any particular product we're working on at any given time, and really more about the miracle of the community, the miracle of entertainment in this era. How, you know, we've just seen over the past 15 years is people really coming together, not just as fans, but as participants in the things that get them up and draw them together, really shaping identity around being a gamer. It's funny, my 6-year-old right now, he keeps asking me, you know, we're playing 6 years old, right? And he's tooling me out on Titanfall the other night. And he's just like, I'm a gamer, right, Dad? Like, I'm a really good gamer, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do you mean? You know, like, cause from a parental standpoint, I'm like, I just want you to be a good kid, a good citizen, you know, like love on people, you know, be honest, be forthright. And in his mind, he's like, no, what's really important for me and my friends is that I'm this mega gamer. I'm like, where does this psychology come from? But it really just speaks of this change, you know, and in what's cool and what kids are thinking about themselves and each other these days. And it's just a Minecraft world, right? Minecraft is just eating, you know, the youth, right?
Yeah.
It's all that happens in my home. And I kind of recognize that that's the result of a lot of this work of the past, you know, 15 or so years. It's just this meta gamer community. It's global now. You know, we almost live in a post-geek world, if that makes any sense.
Mm.
There is no geek anymore. It's just what kids are into. You know, there's no stigma anymore for, you know, kind of embracing, you know, things that we would have hidden in high school to one degree or another if we ever wanted to get a date. Now it's like, it's the edge of cool, right? It is literally the face of cool. Yeah. And that's just mind blowing. And so, Scott, I apologize. What were we talking about?
I didn't even know, but this is good. Dude, this is good stuff though. I mean, I was actually going to ask about this because you have some meta fame in the community for 2010's Geek Is speech that you gave.
Oh.
And it got me to thinking about what you were just saying, got me to thinking about that. There's a tendency for us, I think, in our age bracket to want to continue to celebrate the fact that we went from this, we got bullied for this stuff in school, but now we're the ones in charge and we've brought it to the forefront and we're part of the revolution. And now we can all celebrate in this, in the geekier things of life. And it's mainstream. My old football buddies are claiming to be geeks when I know they weren't in high school. And, you know, all these kinds of things. And we took a real pride in it, or still do take a bit of pride in it. But you just made a really interesting point. My son, your son, the kids that are coming up, they haven't lived in a world where that wasn't already accepted mainstream culture. There's going to come a day where you and I are going to sound like crazy old men talking about a thing that in their minds doesn't exist. It's not applicable.
It's already a ghost. Yeah. It's like that punk rock blast in the 90s, right? Like post grunge punk, you know, it's like, it just cycled out within about 4 or 5 years, you know, it was this big explosion. You know, it's kind of like music fads. Somehow, you know, our generation is kind of, you know, I don't know, to some great degree, you know, we're running entertainment, you know, and if not running, driving.
Sure.
So our values were legitimized, you know, in the past decade or so. And now, you know, the generation coming up, like there's no need to legitimize anything. They live in the warm, cushiony space of anything goes, you know?
Yeah, they live in a time frame, which is hard to put your head around, but they live in a time frame where it's not unusual for 5 or 6 comic book-based movies. And I said, let that settle in for a second. Movies based on, in some cases, B-tier comics. And in one case this year, a comic hardly anyone knew about, including people who read comics on the regular, is now the biggest movie maker, or the money maker in this year's films. No one's made any more money.
Yeah.
That seems insane to me on some level, because this didn't exist when I was a kid. And if you went back in time and said, hey, Scott Jr., guess what? One day, Guardians of the Galaxy will be the biggest money maker in 2014. And all you'll want to do is see it 5 times over. It'll be your kid's favorite movie. I would have thought, no way. There's no way this
impossible.
Stuff right. It's crazy.
I remember, you know, I'm probably 11 years old, and I had, there was a, I want to say it was a 4-issue limited series. It was Rocket Raccoon, and it was like an Art Adams cover. I mean, it was just off the hook. And I remember thinking, like, this is so wild, right? This, you know, and then it just, and then it was years and years and years. I think it was when, I think it was Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning that picked up Guardians after the whole Annihilation event or whatever. And bam, Rocket Raccoon, bam, you know, like, I'm like, are you kidding me? This is just the comic alone 7 years ago. I'm like, this is maybe it was 8 years ago. Mm. And I was just in seventh heaven and not in my wildest imaginings. Could I believe that they would greenlight a Guardians film, let alone one that was so perfectly loving to the source material, you know? And I just, it's a strange age, dude. I can't even believe it. Just the idea that the Avengers popped, or that someone actually made a Thor movie that was, you know, even halfway decent. Like it's such a fun time to be a fan of this stuff. I've loved these ideas. I'm sure the same way. Like I've loved these ideas since I was a little boy, you know? And, I mean, they were defining constantly, you know, the whole Marvel giddy up was just defining to me.
Well, how does all that stuff, I mean, you talk about this sometimes in other conversations, other interviews you hear, and usually, you know, interviews with you are very much more focused on a new release of the game or something like that. It's a lot more of a business oriented thing, but you always refer to some of these inspirations and stuff. What were your big, you know, I hear you talking about Captain America a lot, for example. What were your big influences growing up that maybe informed the creative arc you've taken in your adulthood?
Sure. It's And that's an interesting discussion. Right under the surface of that is it's almost why. You know, what were these ideas and motifs, and why did they make an emotional impact? I mean, I still carry a part of it's just my wiring. You know, my weird Irish nerve endings. You know, I'm a super sensitive person, and that's a blessing and a curse on a lot of different fronts. But when I imprint on a thing, I hold it forever, and I like almost perfect photographic memory. I can't do algebra. I can barely remember people's names when I meet them, you know, family members, you know, I'm just, who are we, you know, but I can remember what gun goes in Greedo's hand. I can remember, you know what I mean? Like yeah. With exacting detail, adventures, the Avengers were on, you know, city names, you know, on the maps of, you know, Ancelon for Dragonlance. Like when I make a geeky emotional connection, it sticks with me forever. So that's a really interesting topic, right? But when I was a kid growing up, you know, I was nerdy, I was you know, sensitive, and you know, I spent a lot of time lost in, you know, I don't know, you know, the landscape of imagination, I guess. So there were two primary things for me. We were all movie fans, and let's just get it out of the way. We're all Star Wars fans. I'm a massive Star Wars fan.
Yeah,
but come on, you know, we're all Star Wars fans.
Yeah.
So if you stay out of the big broad popular stuff, I think the two gears that I kind of throttled up and down on as a kid that really, really shaped my loves, my imagination loves, were D&D and Marvel. Mm. And it strikes me looking back now that the reality is, while they're both very different and D&D particularly, I loved all the worlds they published. In particular, I love Dragonlance. In particular, I loved it because Weiss and Hickman wrote those books so well, right? It was a, you know, Tracy Hickman world, right? That guy is a world-class world designer. And that's a weird thing to say. But that man, you know, was kind of a primary driver insofar as I can understand of the Dragonlance setting, which was a really cool distilled version of D&D. Sure, it had dragons with lances and things, but all of the ways it would kind of spin, you know, the barbarian tribes from Kushu or the Knights of Salamnia or the, you know, it spun the races in such a way that it made D&D not, it wasn't broad. It wasn't a broad palette. It was a very distilled palette. And it had very sharp corners. And then they wrote this series of books where the characters really came first, not the tropes of fantasy. It wasn't particularly about the unicorns and centaurs and, you know, the dragon lords. It was particularly about these friends and how they related and how their relationships changed as they went through this big fantasy setting. And there were deaths and there were betrayals and there were, you know, unrequited loves. And as a kid, you know, maybe I'm at that point, maybe I'm 11 or 12, and it just swept me away. And I love that it was relating, you know, kind of, you know, quasi at that point, you know, kind of, you know, fairly deep characterizations from what I was reading at the time, but really set them in this wondrous landscape of possibility of ancient evils coming to the fore, coming, you know, these ancient dooms coming back around to haunt the present, a desperate fight between light and darkness, and the difference in victory is made through the sacrifice of close friends. And oh man, did that storyline shape me. I mean, if you really take a broad look at kind of the work I've done at Blizzard, you know, when you think about all of them, really, maybe Warcraft and Starcraft in particular, all that stuff still echoes, right? It did something to my heart, you know, and I've been chasing it ever since. So on the Marvel front, what I loved about, I just love superheroes. I think it was around the same time, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh grade. I'm sorry. It was exactly sixth grade. So this must have been 1980. Good God, I can't count. Maybe it's 86 or something like that. Maybe it's earlier, 85. A particular series came out. It was a shameless marketing ploy to sell action figures, but I didn't know that.
Right.
I got my hands on issue one of Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars.
Oh, man.
And it was this gimmick series they did where they took all the superheroes and villains, or most of them, and they plucked them out of the world and they stuck them on, you know, what was it called now? Battle World. I can't remember the particular name. And it was just this big gimmick, you know, this contest of champions. They had to fight each other. But I had never seen anything like this, right? And I'm reading this series. It was a 12-issue limited series. Covers by Mike Zeck. I mean, just unbelievable. Actually, he did the interiors on most of it. And you know, there's Thor and Cap and they're interacting. And it blew my mind. Right. And it drew me into these characters and created pretty much this lifelong love affair with these characters and their little pocket worlds. And sometimes they would spill into each other's worlds. And then later I would learn that guys like Stan Lee and Jack Kirby actually built it this way back in the 60s, you know, that would be kind of a shared universe. And sometimes reading Spider-Man, the Human Torch would fly by and they would sit and talk or have an adventure. And I loved the idea of this big shared world. Yeah. And then it strikes certainly in my professional years, looking back on all that's a big part of why I loved both of these very different expressions, because they were big shared worlds. It wasn't just watching a movie, you know what I mean? And going, wow, that's really cool. It took me into a world for a while. And then I stepped back out. What D&D does obviously is that it draws you in and you can now interact and you can walk the fields of Kryn and you can fight Takhesis and you can be a Knight of Salamnia. Or with Marvel, it's the serial component, right? Where the chapters of this unfolding kaleidoscope of flavors come out every month. Me and my friends, we went to the comic store every week and there's this big shelf of stories, right? Of just windows into this universe. And I would buy a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Oh, there's a crossover. Epic, right? And I loved the interactivity of both of the expressions. And when I step back and look at, you know, something like World of Warcraft, I wonder that a lot of that's in its DNA. And again, I don't know if that's uniquely because of my contribution. Certainly that's part of my contribution, but I think our whole generation really had those things as, I think those things informed our generation as geeks. Yeah. You know, it's not just the stories we love. It's how we interact with the stories and how we engage with the stories, the entertainment form, you know, the interactive games or serial comics or serial, you know, it's how we began to interact with the stories that shaped our love for them as much as the things themselves. And certainly how we as a community kind of engage each other through the different expressions. So, sorry, dude, I think I'm
No. Rambling. This is fascinating because I would argue, and one could easily argue, one of the great strengths of the Warcraft lore, which has been so chiefly in your care for so long, as even just a single example, obviously, the rest of the Blizzard pantheon deserves similar attention, but... you know, all Blizzard games feel this way to me, but Warcraft specifically has this feeling of the larger space and your place in it, if that makes any sense. It's a very difficult thing to replicate. Yeah. I don't know a lot of games that do it very well. There are certainly examples, but this it is one of its strengths. So I guess there's a reason there's so much hubbub and freak out when you guys launch a new cinematic. It's not because... I mean, part of it is we want to see technical prowess on display and they're always better than the year before. And we can't wait to see what that team's working on and all those things apply. But there is this feeling of we are constantly being carried through this story that we'll get to interact in and do our own thing in and be a part of in our whatever weird way. And our raid teams are going to do what they're going to do and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, it all boils down to this place that we can move around in, pick sides in, feel like we have allegiances to. That seems hard to me, but if those kinds of things were your inspiration, what better application than a world like this, I suppose.
Yeah, it had always been the hope is that we could build something. I guess it's easy to say now, you know, kind of rewinding tape 10 years ago, man, it was so hard to build. We were all just running around with our heads on fire and we're just trying to get the game out, you know? So, in hindsight, we seem very, very clever, you know, and at the time we were just like, oh my God, you know, let's just get her done. But it was our intent to try to build the product in such a way and these factions in such a way that we would help players to feel like they were part of something that was alive. Mm. That is this big, you know, series or this big, you know, MMORPG event kind of moved over time that you would feel like you're part of this flow of events, that there is a bigger world out there, that it's very much a living thing. So it's funny. A number of things occur to me as you said that, with some of these chapters that come out, I remember Burning Crusade, right? Was challenging subject matter and I wanted it to be as weird as crystal spaceships and exploded planets in the sky and weird, you know, landscapes from Dimension X wasn't most people's cup of tea. You're like, whoa, what happened to the Knowles and Cobalts? What happened to the, this is not the fantasy I'm used to. Well, some of that instinct was I wanted to change it up. I wanted to take it somewhere it hadn't been. I want to prove that the world isn't going to be bounded by everyone else's rules. And it strikes me looking back on that, that while it was kind of a risk, and even things like Pandaria was kind of a risk, because it's just so out there. It's just so off that beaten path, that even when the expansion sets, you know, the big narrative turn points are very exotic. And even if for some it's not exactly their cup of tea, and there's an interesting point there too, it still feels like you're part of this thing that's moving,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, hell, are we really going to Pandaria? Is that really what, you know, want to spend the next, you know, year or so on? But hey, man, the train's moving. And there is this really wonderful dynamic that this world just moves and grows and breathes, and it draws people in and draws people back. And that's a miraculous thing. And it was kind of funny on that earlier point, dude. I was at an event, maybe it was a month ago now. I can't tell time. And we did an event in LA where we debuted the new Warlord cinematic.
Yeah.
And I'd seen this thing 100 times. You know, we lived with this work a long time in house, you know, before anyone ever sees it outside of the company, of course. And we showed this thing at this event. We'd never done an event quite like it, or like it at all. And it blew the roof off this theater. And it really hit me. I'm like, whoa, you know, like, what's going on? Like, they seem to really, really like this thing. Right? I know it's good, you know, but it's beautiful. You know, it's some of the best stuff our cinematics group's ever done. But I'm like, there's something going on here.
Yeah.
And we walked outside to the lobby of this theater after the event. And so I'm talking to, you know, the fans that had come. And I asked many of them, I'm like, what do you feel happening today? What is it about that piece that people seem so much more excited about? And a lot of people, most of the people said, I got to tell you, Pandaria was fun, but it didn't feel like my Warcraft.
Mm.
And that was the phrase, my Warcraft. It was well made and it was fun and it was a poem and there's beautiful, beautiful components to Pandaria. But what I kept hearing over and over was, this takes me home. This takes me back to Warcraft 2, Warcraft 3, Hellscream, you know, the callback where Garrosh rescues Grom from the fire wave, you know, just like, you know, Thrall did in Warcraft 3. People were like really moved.
Yeah.
And it began to remind me, or it did remind me that, you know, in any development house, you know, maybe ours in particular, it's kind of like we're kind of sometimes in a bubble. And we see things a very specific way. And when I look at Warcraft, I go, well, sure, you know, Pandaria could exist. You know, it doesn't break the world. I can see that working really well. But when players are living and breathing, you know, in between patches, right, day by day, they're channeling through the world, like these ideas, the supersets of ideas become so critical to keep that compass point pointing true north, right, where true north is the core of what makes Warcraft tick is these movements, like these orcs and humans, right? You know, that the fundamental kind of defining themes between the Alliance and Horde. And that really hit me hard with this one. It's a lesson I'm going to remember. You know, I'm hugely proud of Pandaria. We all are. But it's a good indicator of it pays to come back home, right? And it pays to really make sure that our themes are rooted in the fundamentals of the franchise.
Sure.
And so my hope with Warlords is that, you know, the players these days are going to feel, you know, like they're in much more familiar pockets of content. Even if it's a the world of Draenor that they've never particularly visited before, that it's going to feel familiar because it's rooted in the most core values we have, you know. Does
sure.
any of that make any
no,
sense?
No, it totally does. It's funny. The Pandaria comment from them and from you has kind of confirmed a thing I've been feeling, but also excites me because here's something you did with Pandaria, which I loved. It's my second favorite expansion. I love Lich King the most, but this one is definitely right up there.
Crazy, yeah.
So I have no issues with Pandaria, but what I think about it is this. I've always kind of seen it as this very special time in the game's evolution when I could live in it, breathe in it, and play in it, and enjoy it, and just enjoy the motif and the change. I mean, the change was good for me to see this totally new take on the world, and to deal with, you know, these beings who could have been stereotypes. They could have been boring. They could have been, I don't know what they could have been a million things, but instead they were thoughtful and interesting. It could have been, but they were deep and they were interesting, and they, you know, Chen is one of my favorite characters of all time as a result. So all of these things have been true. But what's interesting is what I look forward to the most is that Pandaria will remain a piece of the expansion. And I don't mean a literal expansion of the game. I mean the expanding world. So now you've got this other reference point, this other point of light that joins all these other new things that were inserted into the game and therefore into the lore of the game that will always be there. So we may in Warlords get back to the basics, back to the Warcraft days of, you know, grunting and killing, and let's get those humans and those orcs going toe-to-toe again or whatever. I can't wait for that. I'm stoked for those things to be revisited, to be talked about again. All that stuff is awesome. But I love that there will always be this place that we got to go and meet a new culture and experience this new thing, because they'll show up again and there'll be pieces of it. You can't escape them now. It's part of the world. It's like trying to, it's like discovering a continent and then trying to ignore that they exist. They can't be ignored because they're wonderful and they add so much texture to everything. And so in a way it's like, you guys have to do this twisty turny job of expansions need to be referential, but also new. And I can't even imagine the challenge you guys are faced with all the time. But be able to give us this little pillow to rest our heads on, you know, in the future is a real, you know, that's a blessing to me in the game. I love that.
Yeah, it's funny, man. I remember when we decided to do Pandaria, and we got the big green light, and we're talking about what it is and how it stacks up. I remember saying to the team, it was an instinct at the time. Because the expansions previous, you know, Burning Crusade was not light in tone.
Right.
Alien Apocalypse. What would you call Burning Crusade? Alien Apocalypse. We're going to Dimension X and there's devils that own the planet, right?
Yeah, that's about right.
And then Wrath of the Lich King, right? It's, you know, the dead are rising, doomed to men, you know, we're all damned, you know, it's all going to hell. Then Cataclysm. And then if that wasn't bad enough, the world beneath our feet literally falls away and everything's crashing. You know, our not only is the world breaking apart, but our factions are breaking apart. Our heroes are falling apart. I mean, come on. It was pretty bleak there for a while.
Yeah.
And so I remember saying to the team, in a way, Pandaria has to have its own teeth. You know, it has to have its own kind of thematic tension so that we can accomplish something there. And that's where we got the, you know, the patches really were the meat of Pandaria, where red and blue are really, you know, we had the whole fantasy right up front that, you know, we'll come and adventure in this wonderful land and it will be much like a vacation from the super apocalyptic themes that had defined the previous three expansions. And so we kind of need to kind of vent some of that pressure thematically. And so we'll have fun adventures. We'll go scale Mount Everest. We'll, you know, run through the gardens of the Valley of Four Winds, you know, and just kind of get lost for a little bit, because the tension starts to ramp up when the heavy armor rolls up on the beaches of this beautiful land. And when the Alliance and Horde come and we trample the flowers with our own factional hate, our racial prejudices, and we ruin this land because we can't stop fighting each other. And that was always the promise of Pandaria. But it's interesting as the product rolled out, you know, the game was out for a while and then the patches finally start to drop. But I think while all of that was a good kit, if you're thinking in advance of doing a video game, but maybe it just played out over too long an amount of time. And so maybe it didn't have the, you know, dramatic punch, but, I enjoyed it a lot. I know many people that enjoyed it a lot, but the point I was making was in particular that maybe the franchise needed a little bit of a pressure release valve, but what I'm feeling now from people is not only are they excited to get back to kind of the core franchise themes, you know, and kind of location ideas and, you know, kind of the classic tropes, but they're ready for the A game again, right? They're ready for to face impossible odds, right? They're ready, you know, a little more of that core tension coming back, where the world feels like it's in peril. It's a time for heroes. It's a time to stand up and get involved and back your faction. And there's something about these fictions that there is a subtle psychology. Mm. I think that plays out. You know, it's not just storytelling. It's we're all moving through an experience together, and there have to be stakes. So I think that's what people are experiencing now, is that Warlords definitely feels like a crisp new chapter where the stakes start to mount up again. And, of course, even though it's its own exotic world. But I don't know, it feels very Warcrafty.
I would agree with that. And one thing, the other thing I would say about Pandaria that I think was very effective moving into this was that previous to that, they were obvious threats. There's a Lich King raising the dead, and this is a real threat, guys. So we gotta, you know, we gotta get together and figure this out. Prior to that, you know, a portal to hell opening up and swallowing us whole is a very bad idea. Right. So there are obvious reasons to call to arms and let's go. When it came to Pandaria, or even, you know, Cataclysm, hey, a giant dragon's gonna kill us all, and we know him, but it's now he's pissed and blah blah blah. All that stuff is such an obvious to arms call. Pandaria,
yeah, imminent danger.
Yes, Pandaria presented instead, and I think maybe this is why I appreciate it so much. I think anyway, it presented the moral battle. There were morality questions asked throughout that expansion. They were questions about what, you know, nations, industrialized warlike nations, should do with untouched land, and the questions about what that means and why control matters to them versus how the indigenous people must actually feel. And then challenges for those indigenous people to figure out where their moral compass is and what decisions they should make within that mess and whose side they should take. And even just having a neutral character and having to choose your faction was a moral question. And throughout the expansion, I just always felt like my moral judgments as a, this might sound crazy, but as a white male American, were being challenged in a very positive way. Like, it was a reminder to say, oh yeah, you can relate to all of this because you're not discriminated against, or it's not that you didn't come, you know, people didn't come to the land of Scott and take all his stuff, but some of your ancestors did come to the land of somebody else and take all their stuff. You know, it really got me thinking about those kinds of things. I did not expect that from an expansion of Warcraft, let alone a video game of any kind. So
I think back, you know, just a, you know, a franchise called Warcraft.
Yeah.
You know, that's its essential animus is this tension between red and blue, and why do we keep clobbering each other? You know, especially at this state of the fiction, you've got relatively noble hearts running both factions. You know, now that, you know, Garrosh is deposed, and that was all by intent, you know. But we've got these relatively honorable people kind of locked in this thing. I guess I'll just cut to the chase and spoil it all, because we have to have them fight. It's why people engage with the franchise, right? It's why people play the game, you know, for the horde. You know, horde people flip out. You know, they really, really embrace the psychology. And, you know, it's just it's a trope of the game. So it's kind of a bitch to continue to develop fiction and find new and different ways, or why are they fighting? Are they stopping to kind of breathe a little bit and smell the flowers? That was Pandaria.
Yeah.
That essential question, why do we fight? You know, we tried to ask over and over and over, because there are multiple answers. You know, ultimately the game suggests that sometimes you gotta fight, you know, to protect home and family and, you know, restore balance. You know, sometimes it is a noble endeavor. When it is about getting more, you know, or conquest or accrual or, you know, domination, you know, like those are not the right answers. So it strikes me that with a thing called Warcraft, I feel indebted to at least be asking the questions internally, and challenging us as a development house to be as conscionable as we can about how we portray this stuff, you know, and how we think through our themes and ideas. Because there's a lot of crap in the world, you know, and you see ideas being recycled over and over, you know, and that's all good. You know, it's just entertainment, it's business. I respect all of that, but there's just so many ideas in the air. I guess I guess we want to be very thoughtful about what the content we put out and why and where it takes people, you know. And, you know, heaven forbid you're having a blast with your friends, and heaven forbid you might even pay attention to the story for a while. And heaven forbid the gear under that is that it makes you think a little bit about what we're about in life, you know, outside of these vast, wonderful worlds of diversion, you know, when we're actually being people at work and we're engaging, or we're at school or in our relationships. Like, heaven forbid, you know, that our fictions cause us to be a little thoughtful from time to time, you know. Stranger things have happened, I guess. But, you know, I want a series called Warcraft to have soul.
Sure.
And not just be about clobbering each other on the head, but at least asking the question of why and how and what next.
How much of that do you suppose, to just sort of close us out here, because I think it's a good point to kind of take it. How much of that desire to have that soul in the game? And by the way, it is felt. I think players feel that that attempt. And like you said before, you're still chasing this world building concept. You're still chasing it.
Yeah.
And there's that feeling too of the, you know, there's still stuff to uncover. There's still things to break open. There's still ways to peel back that onion. And I think players, I think players appreciate that. But how much of this is informed, do you think, by being a father or somebody who is trying to bring people up, young people, into a world like I am? So this is of interest to me, obviously, but some of the people listening to this hopefully can understand as well. But this feeling of want to bring up good and right kids in a world that seems to fight against that, and giving them souls, giving them a place to be able to express themselves in ways that are meaningful and to be good people. And you used the term forthright earlier, you know, those kinds of values.
Yeah.
How much of that drives what you do creatively now as a dad?
You know, it's a strange thing to answer. The truth is, for me, it informs a lot of who I am and the gear in life that I am in. And it gives me perspective on the part of my life that is still this work, you know, being an artist. And I don't mean drawing pictures. I just mean being someone that is still, even at 40, desperate to communicate and get out some of the things I feel, the perspective I've had over the arc of my life, and just to communicate these things through my part of this work. So I'll answer the question, but I want to say, you know, I'm just one guy of a giant team of hyper creative people. You know, there's, you know, so I don't know. Things like that are always very awkward. It's certainly not about me. You know, these days it's Alex Afrasiabi. You know, it's been Dave Kozak, and there's the creative directors on WoW now are, you know, certainly more in the driver's seat than I've been in a very long time. So I just want that clear, right? It ain't my show by any stretch, but answer the question honestly, for sure. You know, I think that the spaces we find ourselves in life and the different gears we get into, particularly the parenting gear, it can be transformative. And it was for me, you know. And I think a lot about the things we do here, the things that I'm part of. And I find, looking back, that when I was in my 20s, I wanted to show my friends and my family and the world what I could do, that I could have some good ideas and I could push, you know, kind of crazy fictions through. And there was a lot of, you know, the young man brashness and even cynicism, and just my frustrations as just being a man at that time. And I took it all out on the ideas and expressed myself through those things. It's analogous to music, I guess. When you're younger, your music's heavier. And, and 20 years later at this phase, I do find myself thinking a lot more about kind of the balance of ideas, the nature of heroism that is so core to all these franchises. And I would argue, you know, immersive gaming overall. Why do heroes do what they do? I think a lot about inspiration. I think a lot about kind of hope, and making a difference in the world, albeit fictionally. Because, yeah, you know, that's things when I sit and play Skylanders with my kids, or I sit and play, you know, you play through things like I always wonder what they're thinking and how they're imprinting on ideas and how they're imprinting on the games of today. And I constantly have that feeling. I just want them to be immersed in things that kind of challenge them and inspire them and make them, I don't know, like strive for centeredness mm-hmm. and have a strength of identity so that they can face this crazy world, right? Yeah. With some level of confidence and in a love and appreciation for the people around them of all the different flavors and all the different creeds and, you know, that they see through, you know, all the societal labels and just engage deeply, you know, imagine the world if we're all just engaging more deeply. So those things are totally important to me. I don't know that they would have been important to me when I was a kid doing this job.
Sure.
Because I had my head up my ass and I was selfish and I was thinking about myself and things I wanted and, right. you know, people change. And so the downside of that is, I guess I do have a mortal fear at one point. I mean, it was funny, a number of years ago, we were talking through ideas and this topic had come up. And I'm going to use this as an example, and I don't mean any disrespect because I love this man and he changed the world, right? But sure. It's kind of that thing as we look back on like the Lucas thing and the episode one or even old guys like us will, you know, tool him out about Ewoks and things like that. And it's just, you know, that observation of like, as you mature and become a parent and these other values start to affect your worldview and your self-view, do you run the risk of losing that edge or that spark or that thing that ignited you in the first place at the start of your journey? And can you say that's the mortal fear of every creative person in entertainment, right? Mm-hmm. But the truth is that life has changed. And I think if anything, I look back and it's like, you have to kind of refine that spark. The fact is I'm not angry like I was at 22, you know what I mean? And sure. Anger and the dark side of the force leads to fantastic art. Think about every great song you've ever heard, like every really, truly great tune. It's probably a broken heart. It's probably, some deep, you know, well of pain that's produced these just fantastic works. And in so many different expressions, you know, it's the dark end of the street that can fuel such great creative outpouring, you know, from the artist. But I think you have to keep looking at that as you mature and look for your, I guess, your muse.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I'm a very different person, but my muses are the same, right? It's going back to the start, right? I still love superheroes, man. I still love D&D 5th edition drop, dog. it's a beautiful time to be alive, right? These things are still there and they're still vital and they're burst from the hands of a new generation that's looking at it with new eyes and new energy. And that keeps me connected, you know, and hedges the fear, I guess. So it's that was a super nuanced answer. I apologize, but
no, it's what I wanted because I knew, and asking it might come over as a bit of a pandering question where I knew what I wanted to hear, which is, well, I think it's good that the children learn from, you know, whatever. And that's not what I got, and I'm glad I did.
I think we're both a little validated, I guess.
Well, I mean, there is that. You're so right about the whole rebellion and stuff can breed such amazing work, and it, yeah. and some of that.
Because it's genuine.
Yeah. That's right. It comes out of that. And now, you know, there's, my daughter's getting married in like 3 days. And this feeling of, it's overwhelming that she's 20 years ago that she was born and that 3 years before that I was married and just, you know, these crazy dates in my head are just making my mind reel. But you look back on all that and you go, well, am I as hungry as I was when I was 25? Am I pushing the envelope in the same way with the work I do? Or you know, you always sort of asking yourself that. And what you said kind of hits home. Yeah. There's always this attempt to assess, apply what you've learned, but keep the spark alive and maybe find new places for that spark. Or in some cases, like you just said with 5th edition, some people have the spark now and it's okay to be a part of it in a kind of a parallel way and just keep going, you know? It's great. What a great time. Golden era, man. Golden era for nerd time is what I'm saying.
The best is yet to come.
That's right. Well, it is my pleasure to have had you on today, and I'm just really grateful that you were able to come on and talk to me, man.
Oh, for sure. It's a great honor, man. It's a great privilege always to just get on the phone and rap with you, man. It's I think we always have pretty good chat sessions.
Yeah, I think we've even been able to bleed pretty interesting stuff out of pretty standard PR-driven conversations, which is no small feat in the world of video games. Are there, you got
play
any
World of, exactly. World of Warcraft now, according to your PC.
Exactly. Do you have, you got any big comic projects or anything coming up on the side that you're excited about, you want people to know about before we,
You know, actually, yeah. My writing partner, Flint Dilley, and our artist, Livio Remendelli, we just dropped Transformers Primacy. It's a four-part series. It's print first. So it's on the shelves at local comic stores. You can also get it on Comixology. I think issue 2 just dropped last week. So this is the third part in the trilogy we've been developing that essentially focuses on the first great war between Autobots and Decepticons. You know, some 4 million years in the past. This is where, you know, it all really got its start. So this is the third part in that trilogy. The first was Autocracy. The middle chapter was Monstrosity. And so now we have the third E, which is Primacy. I think we may have made that word up, but I'm gonna stick with it.
That's so, all right. There's a lot there's a lot of weird words in Transformers, so I think it'd be fine.
It's actually not. Yeah, on the average, it's not too bad. So yeah, no, it's been a total blast, and this is the chapter where we see the newly minted Optimus Prime stand up and really become the great leader we remember from you know school afternoons in the 1980s, right?
Yeah.
So it's been just a really, really wonderful project to get to do. I just have a lifelong love for Transformers. So, you know, just getting to touch that franchise, even in this small way, was just straight up bucket list, you know, straight up bucket list. And one day soon, I hope I'll have a hardbound book on my shelf.
Oh.
That has all three of these stories in one volume, and that was the only reason I did this, because I have to have that book on my shelf. It's such a weird thing, but just for myself, it's a Transformers story I always wanted to see. I always wanted to read and experience. So screw it, you know. I grabbed some friends and we made it happen. So
yeah, it's awesome too, everybody. If you're a little spent on Transformers out there listening to this, that is a place where you can renew your energy for it. I've really enjoyed the series thus far, and pretty stoked about the final chapter coming down the pipe. It's Chris Metzen, everybody. I guess we'll see you at BlizzCon, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he'll be the guy on stage getting us all jazzed up about who knows what. But don't stress about it; you'll do just fine. thanks, man. It's a huge pleasure. Thank you so much again.
Thanks so much, man. Great talking to you.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.